All right, what's up, and welcome back for another episode of Cognizant and Cognizance, the podcast born out of recognizing the importance of the second stage of the mastery process, conscious incompetence. This is your host, Jim Perro, speaking, and every week I add a new chapter onto the anthological discussion on life, taking action, and the value of conscious thought. Join me and the occasional guest for a head-in-the-clouds perspective on how to stay grounded and win in all that you do. Enjoy! Scheduled Wednesday programming. Here we are. So just gonna jump right into it as per usual, and I am gonna have a little bit of a longer episode today, as I talked about last week in my little short Happy Independence Day, short 4th of July kind of deal. Excuse me. I'm gonna have a bit longer. I'm gonna talk about a couple different things. I'm gonna do my usual stuff. I want to talk about the Daily Stoic Challenge that I started participating in on Monday, which is pretty cool. I want to talk about the Heterodox Academy study on the partisan perception gap that was written by Sean Stevens. I'll share a little bit of information on what the Heterodox Academy is, because it's a pretty cool organization. Then I'll read the Daily Stoic at the end after I'm done blabbing my life away. Excuse me. Just real quick, quick discussion of what I've learned in the last week, and it's only been a few days. I think I put my last one out on like Friday or Saturday, I don't even remember. So it would have been Friday. Quick discussion of what I learned in the last week. A couple things. The first thing that I've learned over the past like 2 or 3 days, I've learned quite a bit about how the gray market affects the bottom line of distributors, suppliers, and everyday customers on the price points. Like, super fucking interesting shit, right? I started a new job on Monday with Xerox, managing and growing their partner distribution network. So that's kind of just like the precursor to actually doing my job, is understanding the challenges of my job. So that's one of them. Super fucking interesting, right? I know. But orientation never is, and product knowledge almost never is. So another thing that I did learn, and I'll get to this for day 3 of the Stoic Challenge, I learned a little about something that's called decision fatigue, which is essentially your brain makes so many decisions on a daily basis, and after a while, your decision-making starts to take a big hit. You start to make lazier decisions, and your brain, sometimes consciously, sometimes unconsciously, your brain looks for much simpler patterns and tends to ignore more complex thoughts in favor of getting this done and getting on to the next thing because you're getting tired. So I learned about that this morning, actually, when I was doing my Daily Stoic Challenge. So that started on Monday. Essentially what it is a 21-day challenge to basically help you regain some degree of freedom in your life and put you back on the path towards actually figuring out what your most productive mode of operation is. So day one, every day for 21 days, there's a new task. Actually give us a digital calendar to look at. So day one was take a cold shower today, or plunge, like go in a cold body of water, or just an ice bath, anything like that. And so, the science behind that was a few different things. One, it kind of helps you learn self-discipline. That's probably the most important one. And if you can power through a cold shower in the morning, which I did on Monday, did not do yesterday, and today I finished off with about a minute of cold water at the end of my shower, which was actually pretty exhilarating. I didn't even really touch my coffee until about an hour into work, whereas normally I'd have to get another cup right when I show up. So that was cool. But yeah, so the Daily Stoic Challenge, it's something that Ryan Holiday does periodically, sends the email out in the morning at 4 a.m. Eastern time, which is probably when he gets up because he's a psychopath. And, excuse me again. Essentially, the goal is to, like I said, help you reclaim some agency over your life and break bad habits, form new good habits, and get yourself on the right path. So day one was take a shower or a cold shower or a plunge of some kind. Day two, that was yesterday, was choose a diet for the duration of the program and stick to it. Ideally, you stick to it after the program is done. And so for that one was easy. I'm already working on that. I've been doing, as I've said multiple times, intermittent fasting for a couple months now. But I haven't really been very consistent with it. So the idea behind intermittent fasting is to kind of train yourself to eat like our ancestors did. And by ancestors, we mean like the first Homo sapiens, Neanderthals, where you're fasting until you can find food, and then when you finally go out and you find that food, then you feast. And you eat as much as you can because you don't know when your next meal is going to be, and then you fast for a period of time until the next hunt. So the idea behind it is you get your body used to dealing with large quantities of food, but sparingly. So your digestive system and your metabolism are kind of reorienting themselves around this new method of eating, and it also keeps your metabolism running during that fast. So up until now, I've been doing about 8 or 9 hours for an eating window, and then 15 or 16 fasted hours in the day. And so day two, my resolve to myself was to kick that up a notch and really start to stick to it, and take that window down from 8 or 9 hours to 6 and a half hours. And so I did a fairly good job of that today. I ate my first meal today at like 2:30, 2 o'clock actually, and then I finished dinner at 8:30, probably nine. I finished dinner. So, about 6 and a half hours, and that the other 17 and a half are not that fun, but black coffee is permitted, so I just drink black coffee and water until I can finally break my fast. Anyway, and so today was day three of this, 0365 update later. So today was day three, and so the challenge for today was choose a daily outfit. That was the responsibility. That sounds like, so I wear something every day. I choose something to wear every day. But this is more of choose a uniform that you'll wear every day. So there's some interesting science behind this, and this plays into the decision-making fatigue that I talked about earlier. And this is where I learned it was from the passage that comes in the email newsletter every morning. And so this was the reason that Steve Jobs always wore blue jeans with gray New Balances and a black turtleneck. Because the science behind it is, if you take out as many little decisions from your daily life as you possibly can, and you simplify all those tiny little decisions, like I've said before, death by 1,000 paper cuts, right? You take out 999 of those 1,000 paper cuts, you're only got one paper cut to deal with. Whereas by the end of the day, if you get cut 999 times with a piece of paper, you're going to be pretty miserable, you're going to be bleeding, and you're going to hate your life. So the idea, again, is to not get yourself decision fatigue by making all these tiny little choices. And so to choose a daily outfit, it also applies to choose a diet and stick to it as far as meal prep goes. So not having to decide what you want to eat, where you want to eat, if you want to buy lunch, if you want to bring lunch. Just make yourself your lunch and bring it every day and have it be something relatively simple so you don't have to stress about it. Same thing goes with the outfit. And so the choose a daily outfit for me is, I have to pick two just because I don't want to wear the same thing every day. It's just weird to me. It's just really, really weird to me. I don't like that. But anyway, so I have two pairs of suit pants that are the exact same color, so I can wear those a couple times a week, or at least least once each. And then I have a pair of khakis, and then I just have to worry about wearing jeans on Friday, right? So that is going to be my outfit, my daily work outfit is, you know, suit pants and a button-down. Simple button-down, simple shit. I only have two pairs of shoes, so I don't have to worry, like, two pairs of dress shoes that I would wear to work anyway. And so I don't have to worry about that already. And so I'm going to take this concept and I'm going to move it into other areas of my life, I think. Because I like that. I feel like I'm always constantly, thinking about nonsense. And by the end of the day, I don't want to do anything, you know? Except for this, of course, because I love doing this. But yeah, so, any hoozles. That is the first half of my thoughts for the day. Now, the thing that I'm sure you've been waiting for, holding your breath until I can finally discuss this. This is a statistical analysis, kind of a report done by this guy, Sean Stevens, from the Heterodox Academy, who I don't actually know anything about. Really well-written article, pretty solid research, brought in a lot of interesting sources, but he's the director of research. He has a PhD in psychology from Rutgers and State University of New Jersey at New Brunswick. That's where his degree is from. So, yes, so he is another, not just a contributor, he's the director of research for the Heterodox Academy, and I forget what Jonathan role is there, but both great, both amazing dudes, and Sean Stevens is a really good writer. So anyway, he wrote this, he's the author of this paper from the Heterodox Academy called The Partisan Perception Gap. And so just kind of a recap, I mentioned this last week, but the Heterodox Academy, this is an organization that's dedicated to finding the best outcomes for society's like most complex problems. And the goal behind this is to encourage open inquiry, viewpoint diversity, and constructive disagreement in all discussion and conversation. And so the hope and the theory behind these three things is that by committing to keeping them alive in conversation, you will allow for the best outcome or the best solution to rise to the surface, and you let everybody's voice be heard, whether they're in agreement with each other or not, whether they're orthodox thought or heterodox thought. Perfect. And again, you saw my social posts, you read the description of this. Heterodoxy is the opposite of orthodoxy, whereas orthodox thought is the traditionally accepted points of view and lines of questioning. Heterodox would mean less traditional, kind of bucking that trend, that status quo type trend. So anyway, to the study, and this, I promise, will not be, it's not political at all, it's just an examination of the political spectrum and, I suppose, a synthesis of the data from at least 10 or 11 statistical analysis models, and then the subsequent breakdown with the intention to understand the way that politically active citizens perceive the world. And I think, personally, because there's so many different sample sizes in this, I think that those sample sizes could probably be used to make an inference as to how every citizen perceives the world and make it just expand the study essentially into other aspects of, you know, interpersonal communication. So, anyway, as you may have guessed by the title, Partisan Perception Gap, this is talking about the stupid political dichotomy left versus right. Generally speaking, the more extreme far left or far right. And so there's I'll read you about four or five different conclusions that this study draws based on the data from all these different studies. So again, this is generally speaking, and if you'd like to, I'll include a link to this article in the description at the very end if you'd like to read it. It is a great article. Actually, I'm going to pull it up right now. So, here it is. All right, so I will read that link out loud at the end of this and then include it in the for you, so you can go read it yourself and see that I'm not full of shit. Well, I am full of shit, just not about this. Anyway, so a couple of findings. What they found is that the more extreme on the far ends of the political spectrum that a person is, whether that be far left or far right, doesn't matter. The more extreme that person is, the more likely they are to perceive someone else's views as their direct opponent and very extreme opposition of theirs. And that doesn't matter if you're on the same side of the political spectrum or on the other end of the political spectrum. And so you have this kind of far left versus far right thing, like, oh, you're the enemy, you're a Nazi. We also have this far left versus far left thing, whereas, you know, you're not going far enough in your ideology, and that means you're part of the enemy. You have these kinds of things where it's kind of an all or nothing aspect to the thought and the perception of others, which doesn't sound very healthy to me. Anywho, another finding. So the wider the perception gap, the less likely you are to recognize or acknowledge the commonalities between your views and a perceived rival's view. So you can have someone that's, you know, on the either immediate side, kind of a centrist type person, someone who's like pretty reasonable and agreeable, whereas, you know, he's on the left and then his counterpart is on the right, and so she's on the right, they're on the left, they kind of have some commonalities between them, you know. But the further that you get between the two ends of, or between the two people on that spectrum, the less likely the person is to acknowledge that their viewpoints might be kind of similar, and they might actually have some things in common as a person, other than just in terms of ideology. Here's another one. So extremists, so these are just people in the, not in the ideological, or not in the physically manifested sense, like where they're actually committing like acts of terror in the name of their cause, but just people who are ideological extremists. They are very, which I mean, there's kind of a fine line between those two things anyway, but whatever, I'm not here to talk about that. So people that just espouse these really polarizing views, they tend to believe that those on the same end of the spectrum are equally as extreme as they are, or at least are very convicted like they are. And then that's how you get what I was talking about in the first aspect. When they find out that they aren't, that's when they tend to have that kind of, you know, someone far on the right, like, ah, oh, your views aren't right enough, you're not right wing, you're just a liberal baby. Got those losers that talk like that. But yeah, so people who are on the furthest edge tend to want to associate anyone who's on, quote-unquote, their side of the fence as being as radical as they are. Then there's a huge disappointment sense that happens when they find out that this person's a little more normal than they are compared to the rest of us. Great. So, here's another good one. The wider the gap, the wider the perception gap, and so the wider the gap between the two on the spectrum, the more likely that person is to attribute negative character traits and experience negative emotions towards people with differing views, which goes without saying, I suppose, but it's just interesting that they included that as a separate bullet in there. So this is another one of those things that really could apply to any aspect of life. You know, the more stuck in your ways that you are, the more likely you are to attribute negative character traits and experience negative emotions towards people who, you know, don't think the same way that you are, which is a shame. Here's a good one. Consumption of popular media is associated with a wider perception gap. And so just to reiterate, I've been mentioning, actually I haven't even iterated it the first time yet, but just to kind of mention this, when they're talking about the perception gap, they're talking about two things. They're talking about where the person is on the political spectrum versus the people that they view as their enemy, how close they are to the middle versus how close they are to their edge. And they're also talking about a perception gap on an individual level. So you're thinking that, you know, you're the aspect where I was talking about this person is far left, or maybe this person's far right, they're a really hardcore right winger. The perception gap, meaning they experience everyone else's viewpoints as more radical than they actually are. But consumption of popular media, social media, popular news sources, like Fox, CNN, MSNBC, whatever the fuck the rest of these are, Breitbart, all that dumb bullshit that nobody really should actually be watching. Consumption of popular media is actually associated with a wider gap in both senses. So the more media that you consume, the more likely you are to think that people on the opposing viewpoint are evil, and the more likely you are to think that they're more evil than they actually are, or they're more extremist about their views than they actually are, which I guess isn't necessarily surprising to me either, after all. Finally here, this one I think was the most interesting. Snooze that. Sorry about that. So this was the most interesting one out of all the findings. And this one says that education, specifically secondary and post-secondary, or post-secondary and tertiary education, generally widens instead of narrowing the perception gap. And so what you're finding is that the more educated someone is, the more that they view others as extremely against them. And so this is just me talking, this isn't what they said, but I think this might be a little bit due to the Dunning-Kruger effect, which is the psychological bias where we overestimate our ability or our abilities or our how smart we are. Essentially, we overestimate how smart we are. Kind of give yourself this illusion of superiority because you're so biased, because you've done the work. So what you're finding is educated people are overestimating their ability to understand the nuanced opinions of other people because they've got a high level of education, a master's degree, PhD, whatever. Couple that with the superiority bias, and they're underestimating the weak points in their own arguments. So you've got someone who thinks they're smarter than they are, the negative side of their viewpoints is less negative than it really is. And so I think that is how education widens instead of narrows the perception gap. So I want to kind of slow down a little bit here, because I do have quite a few good things that I want to talk about. I want to give a shout out to the U.S. Women's National Team, baby. Cup champs. I think there's been a lot of hate being thrown at the women's national team for just literally anything about them recently. They hated fucking Megan Rapinoe for calling her shot by saying, "I'm not going to the White House when we win," essentially. They won, obviously, so suck it. There have been some amazing celebrations. The tea celebration, that post-game locker room celebration was fantastic. And people hate on them for that. They're outspoken advocates for many different causes, whether it's, they're essentially LGBTQ rights, AIP, I don't know how many letters there are, but there's a lot. There's probably more than I just listed. The rights of the minority population. They talk about things at the border. They talk about different injustices perpetuated against African Americans, whatever it be. Everybody likes to hate on these ladies now. And so anybody who doesn't like the women's national team for whatever reason it is, you don't think they should be voicing their opinion or whatever the hell it is, fuck you. It's a little harsh, but I want you to listen to this next part. And I'm taking some lessons out of these myself, because I think I catch myself doing some of these things all the time. So, here we go with three applications of heterodox thought and action that you can immediately apply to your life, and that if you're not already doing. Everyone is probably doing some of these to some degree, but it's always good to get a conscious reminder, or a reminder to be conscious, rather, about, you know, your attitudes and your own thought process. So here we go. Three heterodox applications of those concepts for your life. So obviously the first one, this one I've talked about plenty of times before, is to recognize and regulate your media consumption, which the heterodoxy comes in with that because most people don't. Most people are just on social media all day. I'm on it way too much. I know it, even though I've been using this app that batches my notifications and doesn't let me see them immediately. I get to see my notifications every like 6 hours or something like that. I still just check the apps. So I got to figure out something there. But recognize how much your media you're consuming, whether it be television, the news, radio, social media, text message, whatever the hell it is, podcasts even. Recognize how much of it you're consuming and do your best to regulate that or cut back on it specifically. And this is because the more media you consume, as evidenced by that study, the more susceptible you are to being influenced and thus being pushed into the more extreme ends of society. And that doesn't just include political opinions, that includes, you know, extreme spending, extreme eating, just eating way too much, laziness. Most people can't stop consuming, and it's dragging them down in more ways than one. And I thought of that just following through on Daily Stoic Challenge 3 today, which is basically to simplify your life and take those annoying decisions out. And I think that's one thing that drags me down, is having to make so many tiny little decisions, or at least thinking I have to make so many tiny little decisions every single day, every hour, every minute. It's really not that important. My life's not that fucking important that I have to be so stressed about tiny little decisions. And so anyway, yeah, recognize and regulate media consumption so that you can gain more control over your own thought processes. And most people will not do that or don't do that. Number two, stop turning your panic room into an echo chamber. Now, what do I mean by that? So I think everybody, when you're in an uncomfortable situation, whether it's, you know, you read something that's unsettling, you see a movie, you're having a conversation that you really just don't like, you're nervous about something, you have stage fright, whatever the case may be, you have this, everyone has this, and I'm dubbing it a mental panic room, that place that you go in your head when something's not right to kind of reassure yourself. And that makes it really easy to retreat from an uncomfortable conversation, whether it's an ideologically uncomfortable conversation, a spiritually uncomfortable one, an emotionally uncomfortable conversation, whatever the case may be. We all have this tendency to lean on the ideas or thoughts that you find familiar and comforting to kind of bring you back to a comfortable place, which is fine, and it's good. It's good to be comfortable. It's good to figure things out, but it's also good to be uncomfortable. And really what that's doing is just putting a Band-Aid on a larger problem, which is, you know, you're not leaving your comfort zone. You can't grow. Growing hurts. It's very painful. Aristotle said the mark of an educated mind is to entertain something without accepting it as a fact, to think about something without saying, yeah, I agree with it, just to ponder that thing. And so here's my proposition. I'm proposing, and I do this all the time just because I like to play devil's advocate with people and kind of get annoyed about that because I can't stop it. But I propose that you should intentionally engage with and try to digest ideas and concepts that make you a little bit uncomfortable. And I guess the purpose of this is to look for a kernel of truth in something that you don't or probably never would consider or agree with otherwise. Even if it's somebody else's truth, it's got nothing to do with you, try to find that truth in their statements. And that's what unites us all in the end, is the truth of reality, the truth of, you know, the truth of existence is what unites us all. And it's the common thread that every breathing sentient being has, is the truth. Aldous Huxley, another quote, I'm dropping quotes all over you here. The truth doesn't cease to exist because it's ignored. So finding out someone else's truth and how that truth fits into your truth and your frame of mind, your understanding of the world and reality, it's really the key to understanding them, that other person, and it's the key to understanding the world. is to find out what people's truth fits into yours. And so stop turning your panic room into an echo chamber of ideas. Anyway, here's the last one. And there's one more. Actually, there's two more quotes technically with the Daily Stoic read. But I do have one more quote in here. And it's from Marcus Aurelius talking about how we value the opinions of others more than we value our own. That's a paraphrase. And so the reason that he says that's a bad idea is because everyone's exaggerating things, you know. And that's the third application. Is I challenge myself and I challenge you to recognize that everyone else in the world is lying about something. So stop lying to yourself, you know. And this is, I'm not saying everyone out there is a liar and out to get you, but the Daily Stoic article, like the newsletter today's, they're basically talking about how if we all just realize that tiny little lies, like, you know, posturing in a conversation, just slight exaggerations, you know, they're not big lies, they're not really hurting anybody, but they're reinforcing your own ego and they're building up that shield around you. That kind of deceit is incredibly common. Almost everyone does it, and if you say that you don't do it, now you're lying. Gotcha. But essentially, the point is that we would all be able to do better and be happier if we just realized that these tiny little lies are really, really common. Everyone lies about what they make, how confident they feel, they put that mask on, how hard they're actually working to their boss, how well life is going sometimes. And so, and the point of Marcus Aurelius's quote is that why are you comparing yourself to the opinions of other people when yours is the only one that matters? And not for nothing, but you're comparing yourself to opinions that are built on tiny little lies. And so the goal is to stop thinking about them and stop lying to yourself. The idea, again, once you stop lying to yourself, you stop reinforcing your own ego, you can then be honest with yourself and identify and acknowledge the faults in your own logic and lifestyle. And as you acknowledge your own faults, you start to open yourself up to the idea of viewpoints that are not yours, that may not be so faulty. And this helps you understand the perspective of others as kind of a harmonious complement to yours, rather than an opposing viewpoint that needs to be attacked, a la the perception gap. And so those are my three applications of heterodox thought and action for living against the grain. And so gonna shift gears a little bit here. And 1 second, I'm gonna get my book out. Oh, and I started reading another great book, by the way. So today's Daily Stoic newsletter was actually more the subject of today, but the Daily Stoic entry for today, July the 10th, again, the month of July, is focused on the concept of duty and doing what needs to be done, regardless of whether you want to do it, essentially. So yeah, admittedly, today's commentary centers more around the newsletter than it does this entry, although this episode may be about breaking tradition in order to get where you're going, but reading the daily passage out loud is not what I intend to break today. So, without further ado, we have a quote from, I told you there was one more, another quote from Marcus Aurelius from Meditations, which I need to find my copy of that and start reading it again. July the 10th, month of July is duty, and today is called Love the Humble Art. Marcus Aurelius says to himself in Meditations, because it's basically a diary, love the humble art you have learned and take rest in it. Pass through the remainder of your days as one who wholeheartedly entrusts all possessions to the gods, making yourself neither a tyrant nor a slave to any person. And so then we got Holiday Enhancement. Stop by a comedy club any weekend night in New York. York or Los Angeles, and you're likely to find some of the world's biggest and most commercially successful comedians in there. We're chopping their craft for just a handful of people, which is, quick side, one of my dreams to go to the two clubs that they mention here for Comedy Show. Anyway, though they make a fortune in movies or on the road, there they are, practicing the most basic form of their art. And if you ask any of them, why are you doing this? Why do you still perform? The answer is usually, because I'm good at it, or because I love it, or because I want to get better, because I thrive on connecting with an audience, or even better, because I just can't not do it. It's not work for them to get up on stage at Caroline's or the Comedy Cellar at 1 a.m. It's invigorating. They don't have to do it. They're free and they choose this. Whatever humble art you practice, are you sure you're making time for it? Are you loving what you do enough to make the time? Can you trust that if you put in the effort, the rest will take care of itself? Because it will. Love the craft and be a craftsman. And so, you know, pretty solid one. That was, I don't know if I'm going to love what I just started doing for work, but I guess it doesn't really apply to that because, for instance, I have this podcast. I really enjoy making an episode every week. Been thinking about going up to maybe two episodes a week, but I don't know about that. But here's the thing. I just enjoy the concept. I love doing it, so I continue doing it. You know, some people, like your lovely self, listen to it. And I don't make any money off just making this episode, and I don't spend more than a few hours every week to do it and create it and get my thoughts down. But I enjoy it because it's fun, and it makes me think, and it gives me something to put on my to-do list that doesn't totally suck, honestly. It gives me something to look forward to on Wednesdays when I get home from the work and the gym and all that necessary stuff. Excuse me. So, here's a couple snacks, a couple of pieces of food for thought here. I've got my podcast. I'm passionate about that. I've got, I've got a bunch of other things that I'm passionate about. I'm passionate about sports, but that doesn't really count because I don't play them. Passionate about reading, passionate about writing, which I need to start doing. What are you passionate about? You know, is there anything you create or produce? Any ideas that you have rolling around in your head? And how are you working towards manifesting those ideas out in the physical world? How are you working on getting those thoughts down on paper or pushing out, you know, some kind of a creative work? And most importantly, in the pursuit of pushing out that creative work, how can you break away from tradition today to get where you want to be? How can you change the paradigm in your own life so that you can start thinking, living, and acting against the grain? And that is an episode. See you next week, and I have no idea what I'm going to be talking about, but I'll be here Wednesday. See ya.